Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Sinski v. Cbase, Incorporated. Mr. Beck.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm Dave Beck for the appellant. The issue in this case comes down to whether plaintiff presented sufficient evidence by which a reasonable juror could decide that Cybase's asserted reasons for firing Mr. Sinski were a pretext, or more generally, whether plaintiff presented sufficient evidence from which a reasonable juror could decide that Sinski's age was a determinative factor in his termination. It need not be the sole reason, but even when coupled with legitimate business reasons...
How old was he when they hired him?
He was 54. However, he was hired by a different supervisor.
I just asked how old he was when he got hired.
Sorry. Doesn't need to be the sole reason, but even when coupled with legitimate business reasons, it has to be the reason that tipped the cart. Mr. Sinski presented that evidence and more, but the district court granted summary judgment anyway. Sinski gave sufficient evidence to that reasonable juror in multiple ways. Plaintiff presented evidence that similarly situated employees with more profound performance problems than Mr. Sinski were rewarded with raises, and Mr. Sinski, the number one account manager in all of North America for Cybase, was rewarded with a performance improvement plan and termination.
The defendant makes much of the fact that there was one sale, I don't recall the exact year, that they call it a bluebird, and that artificially inflated his record. And he really, in other words, he really wasn't as good as his record would indicate.
You're right.
What do you think of that?
The defendant did call two sales. One was Bank One and one was HSBC, bluebirds for Mr. Sinski, which was somewhat of an odd characterization given the fact that Mr. Sinski had been working on those deals since 2002. They finally came to fruition at the end of 2004. There was a lot of work in that. More than that, if we look at how Cybase characterize those deals at the time they were made rather than in litigation, we see a much different picture. Number one is there was a split commission. Under Cybase's policy, the commission is supposed to be split between two account managers who are working on the same deal, commensurate with their contribution. Pursuant to that policy, Mr. Sinski received 90% of the commission in one of those large deals and 50% of the commission in the other large deal. We can take it even further. If we look at Mr. Sinski's 2004 evaluation, which encompassed those two so-called bluebird deals, Mr. Sinski received a rating of number one on production of revenue. One, meaning extraordinary performance.
So is it your position, bottom line, that that characterization is inaccurate and that he really worked hard to generate those sales and that, in other words, then his performance rating was not overstated?
It was very much inaccurate, and way we can show that it was inaccurate is by Cybase's own assessments, Mr. Rader's own assessment in the evaluation, when he said that Mr. Sinski had performed extraordinarily in 2004, largely because of those two deals that came to fruition at the end of 2004.
What about his capacity to perform as a team player?
Team player. once again, if we look at the difference between Sybase's position in litigation and Sybase's assessment at the time, we see a very contrasting picture. Mr. Senske was evaluated for his teamwork in 2003 and 2004. Both times he was given an assessment of exceeds expectations on teamwork. The one incident that Sybase relies upon was a complaint from another account manager on the HSBC account. That was a global account. The global account manager designated by Sybase was in England. There was an account manager who was working on HSBC in New York who complained about Mr. Senske. And what he complained about Mr. Senske was that Mr. Senske was talking to the global account manager that Sybase designated to be in charge of that account. It was not a complaint that Mr. Senske was doing an end-around with a customer. It was that he was reporting to the person that Sybase said was in charge of the HSBC. That is the single incident that Sybase relies upon to say he wasn't a teamwork player, and it is in contrast to all the evaluations that Mr. Senske received on the issue of teamwork. More than that, as you pointed out two things, teamwork and the Bluebird. Oh, and there was another one, customer satisfaction. There was an incident with Citadel. If you look at Sybase's own evaluation priorities, they created a performance evaluation. They prioritized the categories. Customer satisfaction and teamwork were combined with three other factors to, as the group, was worth only 20% of the evaluation. 20%, so that means at most, teamwork, customer satisfaction, were worth 5%.
There was also a claim that he was habitually tardy for meetings and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Apparently you don't really deny that.
We do not deny the three occasions that Sybase has set forth for the court in a period of 8 months. One was picking up Mr. Rader at the airport. It did not involve any customer. Second, Mr. Senske was late on the day after his daughter ran away, a fact that Mr. Rader knew at the time. It was rather extraordinary circumstances. Of the three incidents that they point out in 8 months, there was only one that involved a customer. Now, I believe that one way of showing pretext would be showing that the asserted reason is insufficient to merit termination, and I would submit that one tardiness in 8 months is not sufficient.
Well, they're not really relying on just one incident. They're looking at the whole picture, and they're saying this is a fellow that we can do without, and maybe they're wrong. Maybe he was deserved more credit for this alleged Bluebird sale that was made, but it has to be an intentional pretext to cover up age discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your problem is going to lie here.
Well, it can be no question that revenue production was by far the most important criteria for the evaluation of account managers. They were salespeople. The very essence of their existence was to generate revenue. Under that criteria, and Sybase, in everything about the way they went about it, they indicated that was the most important. It was by far the most important criteria for evaluation. It was the way that Sybase ranked their account managers solely by their production. It was the only prerequisite for admission to Sybase's highest honor, the President's Club, which defendant has characterized as an appreciation junket, and an honor that Mr. Senske received 13 days before he was terminated. So if you look at Jaeger and versus Upjohn, or Brown versus M&M Mars, both of them, both cases stand for the proposition that good performance itself can be evidence of pretext, particularly good performance in the most important criteria. As Mr. Brown, they said he was very good at production, just like Mr. Senske. And that fact is evidence of pretext here. Now, in contrast to the very important criteria of revenue, we have two very small criterias of teamwork and customer satisfaction, constituting no more than 10% of the evaluation. It would make sense because Sybase wanted revenue and one smaller indice of getting revenue would be teamwork and customer satisfaction. But the ultimate question for any account manager was, what have you produced? Mr. Senske had produced 186% of his quota. Nobody else in Mr. Rader's team had even reached quota. As a matter of fact, if you look at the similarly situated account managers, Mr. Senske outpaced the second highest by almost 3-1. That was extraordinary performance, and that by itself is evidence of pretext. The fact that Mr. Rader targeted the two oldest account managers within his first 8 months and terminated both of them during a period where he did not terminate anybody else, nor did he discipline anybody else. That is evidence of pretext. The reasons, and then there was paperwork. They complained about his paperwork. Mr. Rader also complained about the paperwork of all the similarly situated people, and evidence showed that they did worse in their paperwork. They received raises. Mr. Senske received a termination. Mr. Senske met his burden.
You've almost used up all your rebuttal time.
Here. Oh, with room to spare, and he's now entitled to his day in court before a jury. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Ms. Reed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Felicia Reed for the appellee, Sybase Incorporated. I want to address specifically some of the points that Mr. Becht made, but first I think it's important to note two overarching issues. Mr. Senske's strategy on summary judgment has been to call out a number of bare facts out of their context to try to raise the tribal issue of discrimination. But in examining summary judgments in discrimination cases, this court looks beyond the bare facts to all of the evidence, including the context in which the events at issue arose. And this is evident in a number of cases cited in our brief, the Foss versus Sears case, the Grayson versus O'Neill, and the Caniff case, those cases that deal with the issue of similarly situated comparators. And so I would urge the court, if it has not already done so, to actually look at the evidence instead of taking our characterizations of it at face value. As to the larger context in which the events in this case arose, there's no dispute that there was a corporate initiative that occurred in 2004 and that was formally instituted in January of 2005 to strengthen lackluster sales and take what was a fairly mediocre field sales organization and bump it up to the next level of professionalism. And all three of the decision makers in this case were hired as part of that effort: Barb Stinnett, Steve Capelli, and finally Alan Rader. And they did two things. One is they instituted sales processes and held people to them. And the second thing is they focused on strategic solution selling. And it was in both of these areas that Mr. Senske, the undisputed facts show, really, despite repeated directions, didn't respond at all. Said, that's too much work. I'd rather say it orally. I'm not responsible. That's not my job.
How old was Stutz when he was fired?
I believe he was 57 years old.
So Rader, when he comes in, of the people that he's in charge of, the two oldest ones are the ones that he gives the pink slip to within 6-8 months of his...
Correct. Salary. Correct. I think if you look at the facts behind Mr. Stutz's termination, there's no dispute. He was the worst performing salesperson in terms of revenue in the entire North American field sales organization. He made just 10% of his quota. He was at the bottom of the heap in revenue. And if
he didn't have a lawsuit, did he?
I think he has something going on. I'm not involved in it, so I'm not prepared to talk about it. But, you know, that's a separate case. I think Mr. Senske has to be judged on the facts of this case, and the facts are actually largely undisputed. The facts of clear and explicit direction beginning in late 2004 are undisputed. I want to talk about this issue of the Bluebird and the Bank One, J.P. Morgan Chase deal. That is the Bluebird, not the household deal. Mr. Capelli mentioned two Bluebirds when he was talking to the Vice President of Human Resources about Senske's termination. We admit there is a triable issue of fact whether Mr. Senske actually was the one who closed the household deal. So there are issues with how he participated in that closing. But the true Bluebird is the Bank One deal, and there is no dispute. Mr. Senske admits it in his deposition. He never made the sale. Once New York took over, and up front, before they knew anything about the deal, and how far they wanted to push it or developed an account plan, they said, we're going to give you 50%. That was a predetermined split. And once New York took over, Mr. Senske did not give them any account plan information. He did not participate in account planning strategy. He did not participate in closing or even in strategizing closing. That is all in his deposition. He admits that. His deal that he was working on was worth about $900,000. It wasn't yet at the closing stage. No commitment in terms of timeline had been made, and so he speculates he was going to close it. Well, who knows? But what is true is that the size of the deal grew by a factor of 6 to $5.2 million based on a very aggressive account plan and strategy developed by New York with no input from Mr. Senske and no closing participation by Mr. Senske. He was paid handsomely for that. That's not the issue. But to say that that revenue indicates that he was a good performer when what he was being criticized for and ultimately terminated for was his failure to engage in strategic account planning and issues with not really being very good at closing deals, that doesn't do anything to undermine those reasons. The household account that he did receive credit for, he says, well, I closed it. Rader says you didn't close it appropriately. That was Rader's opinion based on undisputed evidence. Senske did not dispute this, that Mr. Rader was left to hammer out the details of the contract, asked Mr. Senske to participate, and he didn't. I want to talk just a few minutes about tardiness. Judge Evans was correct that, in fact, this was an ongoing problem. It was flagged throughout Senske's employment. More importantly, timely response to management is flagged in the performance improvement plan. Tardiness is flagged in the termination recommendation. Mr. Rader says in the termination recommendation, he has never been on time to any meeting that I've attended with him. And in fact, during the period after he received the PIP, he's late to an important client meeting. He's almost late to another. They have to jump on a train to make sure they will get there. In terms of the similarly situated issue, there were other account managers. They worked on different kinds of accounts, but I think more importantly, they weren't subject to the same set of issues that Mr. Senske was, as we argue in our brief. I think if you look at the paperwork issue, saying that, you know, they were worse than he was and he was better really mischaracterizes the evidence. And I would encourage you to actually look at the evidence. Ms. Jones actually did her close plans the great majority of the time. No evidence about the account plans, always did her forecasts, said she did maybe one blue sheet. Mr. Senske said, well, I did one too, but you know the one he did was the training exercise in January 2005, and he's very careful not to say that he ever turned it in to his manager. There is a lot about the 2004 performance evaluation that Mr. Beck talked about, and I would just note that when this court looks at performance, it is performance at the time of termination that is important. In a case that Mr. Beck cites in his brief, Rand versus CF, the executive had a great evaluation the year before, had gotten a bonus. This court said that doesn't matter. 6-8 months later, he's not doing so well. Some things had happened during the most recent post-evaluation period. That's what we're looking at, not the prior year's performance. And certainly there's ample evidence that is not disputed here, that beginning in January 2005 and continuing through June when Mr. Senske was terminated, he failed to respond to any of the directions that he was given. The two complaints that end up being triggers for the termination, I don't think there's any tribal issue of material fact here. The complaint from Citadel, Mr. Senske says that wasn't my problem, but in fact, based on his job description, based on his title, he was the manager. He was the team lead. It's in his 2004 evaluation. You're going to become a team. You are a team lead. It's in his job description. It's consistent testimony that he was the face to the customer. He was not doing his job. True, he wasn't the person who was supposed to actually go in and fix the problems, but he was to ensure that his team was proactively addressing those things. And I think there's no dispute that the client was complaining about Mr. Senske. Mr. Senske's account management, from an account management perspective, is problematic. Certainly there's no evidence that Mr. Rader did not honestly believe that the customer was complaining about Bob Senske. We have included the email in our papers, and it speaks for itself. In terms of team playing, these issues did not come forward until late 2004, early 2005. Mr. Senske had been directed directly by Mr. Rader, listen, you can't just work with the global person. You also need to work with New York, include New York. And he did not do that. No dispute. He doesn't dispute. He didn't do that. And if you look at the incentive plan, it puts forth Sybase's policy. We expect our folks to work as a team, to share information, all in order to bring in the deal. Mr. Senske wasn't doing that. I respectfully submit that there really wasn't much here to warrant submitting this to the jury on Mr. Senske's claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Beck, how much time? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Beck.
I'll talk fast. Number one, the Citadel issue. There was a complaint from Citadel. It was clear that the complaint dealt solely with technical issues. Nobody, not Mr. Rader, not anyone from Sybase, contends that Mr. Senske had the expertise to deal with technical issues, nor did he have the authority to instruct those people who are responsible for technical issues to do anything about it. In Brown versus Mars, there was an attempt to close, there was a closer of the line, and they attempted to blame the supervisor. What they showed in that case, they said that was inappropriate because it wasn't his fault, it was somebody else, and they were trying to blame him for somebody else. In Brown, the somebody else was a direct subordinate of Mr. Brown. In Senske, the somebody else was somebody that Mr. Senske had no authority over. There is an issue of fact in there. There are several misstatements I want to address. Heather Jones testified that she did not do blue sheets. She did not do closed plans. She did a worse job in paperwork than Mr. Senske. As far as Bank One, it is true that Mr. Senske did not lead the closure of that. That was because Sybase designated New York because the new higher-ups in the merged company were in New York. However, Mr. Senske testified that he worked with the New York people. He worked with his contacts in Bank One. He participated in meetings and account strategy. He was totally involved in that. We have shown that there were similarly situated people that were treated more favorably. We have shown that Mr. Rader targeted the two oldest people in his organization, and he terminated them. We have shown that the reasons that they have offered are either factually false or de minimis. Under any of those, all three of those, there is a triable issue of fact. A reasonable juror could easily decide that Mr. Senske was discriminated against because of his age. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.